The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
It's the fourth day of May, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And no, I'm not here to talk about Star Wars. All right, maybe I am. It's been an interesting week. How about that? Woden's Day, Wednesday, middle of the week. And, well, I don't know how this show is about to turn out. You know why? I got Nico House with me. And, look, before it gets strange at all, okay, let me just say this. I love this guy based on his attitude, period. That's it. His ability to analyze things is one thing, and intelligence is there. It is interesting, excellent, and not always in line with what I think. I like to listen to him. I like to catch exactly how he decides to drop information to people. I really do. Now, I haven't been listening lately. I got to be honest. And there might be multiple reasons for that, and we are living in strange times. But Nico and I might have disagreements during this discussion. I think that might happen today. But we'll see how it goes, because I got to tell you, I'm disagreeing with the whole world at this point. Seems like I got nobody on my side. And Nico,
well, we agree on that.
Nico wouldn't whine about that, but I was about to say, I think he knows where I'm coming from. Because sometimes, you know, characters that do things their own way. And I don't mean to say that Nico's a character. He's a real guy. I mean to say that people that do things their own way, men that do their things their own way specifically, but I know women too, same kind of problem. Yes, I do. But, man, I only know it from one side, okay? So men that do things their own way, seems like the whole world will push up on them sometimes, okay? And it's not just because their opinion doesn't match. It's just because, well, that's just the nature of, the experience of life for some of us who continue to breathe in defiance of what others might wish. Anyways, Nico, you can tell the mood I'm in. I know you were just doing a little walk. I would not be walking right now. I am so in such a mood. I would just say, look, I don't even want to exercise. I'm not looking to be outside. I don't want to run into people. How about this?
Well, I'll tell you, the walking and the exercising is actually part of the plan of keeping my sanity. Because don't worry, I've been feeling the exact same way. And I agree with you. I mean, history has shown that those who tend to march to the beat of their own drum, if you will, who refuse to be put in a specific category, especially at somebody's convenience, they're the ones who are demonized the most. And it isn't because they're wrong. Usually they are right, at least for the most part. But it's mostly because our very presence encourages others to be courageous enough to think for themselves, regardless of what side of the fence they may fall on. And that, of course, is inherently a danger to those at the top, but also those who profit in one form or another from the status quo, or benefit in one form or another from the status quo.
Right. See, and that's there's the key. Again, the common element between you and I, the way I see it, is that one thing that we definitely threaten is anybody who is benefiting off of just keeping things as they are. Because the second you or I enter a room or end up in a discussion somewhere, and I'm not saying that I'm as good at you as you are at it, but I have an effect also. You know, it's a guarantee. You're going to get people to start to look at things maybe in a different way. So I'm going to kick this off with something that makes no sense for me to talk to you about.
Okay.
And why? I think you're going to understand my madness and my method in a moment. So let's see how it goes. But okay. So what did we get treated to early this week? The big leak, right, from the Supreme
Court. I'm like, which leak? I didn't know if we talk about Pfizer. I didn't know if we talk about Supreme Court. I didn't know if we talk about Ukraine documents.
Well, see, there you go. I was going to say that, too. You and I are thinking the same way right now, right? So I'm sitting here going, it's funny, because usually there's, you know, in the past, we've always had there's the one big leak, right?
Mm-hmm.
If we rewinded a couple of days, you could say that there was the leaked information that there was going to be a book that was going to drop, that blah, blah. And yeah, okay. So there's always something that's leaking and this and that, and it's become commonplace. I mean, this ain't Watergate, okay?
Yeah.
It's not like everything is really shorn up and it's difficult to catch things between 6 and 7 p.m. local time when you get to see Cronkite, okay? It's not like that anymore. But in the 24-hour and constant unending news cycle, we got all this happening. So let's start with the one that makes the least sense for you and I to discuss, which is abortion. And you go, okay, if doesn't matter which side you or I are on the equation, let's just examine the drop and think about it for a minute here.
The drop is problematic. It's problematic the way, I mean, you're talking about the only drop in Supreme Court, like leak like this in Supreme Court history, right, conveniently placed before midterms.
Exactly. Well, conveniently placed before midterms and in the midst of other things going on this week, because short attention span is a guarantee, especially with the American public, but I think might be a worldwide phenomenon. I'm not certain, but I do know with the American public, it's short attention span all the way. So yeah. Abortion, and you go, okay, that's a staple issue. As long as you've been alive, I forget how old you are. I'm 50, but either way, it doesn't matter. Guaranteed our whole lives. That's always been one of the go-to issues politically. Mm-hmm. This is a divisive issue. Okay. But forget that. The drop from the Supreme Court, completely bizarre, because I can't think of a situation where you had anything other than rumors, innuendo. Maybe somebody has pressured a Supreme Court justice to make a comment about something that's ongoing. But I've never seen this before. So you just answered one of the questions, but is this more about the strategy, or do you think this is, I mean, is it the method?
it's a strategy. Well, we know, I mean, I think we're both in agreement that we're in a duopoly. Like, the parties are not really different in their grand agenda, although the strategy on how they achieve their goals may differ based off of who they're pandering to at the time. Okay. And I think that this is actually a perfect example, right? So you have this leak that occurs, and Democrats are focusing on an opinion that actually hasn't been rendered yet, which is actually, there's a good possibility that this is only an opinion that was drafted. Because, like, you know, the judges, a lot of times, sometimes they don't even draft their opinion. Like, they give their notes to somebody, you know, some intern or some staffer, and they just type everything up. And they're aware of how the format is supposed to be put out. But it's kind of like when you're watching an NBA or NFL Super Bowl or NBA championship or something like that. There's one article put out in case one team wins, and there's another article actually prepared just in case the other team wins, just like they make. So it could be a situation where if the opinion, because this is a very divisive issue, and so in advance, based off of the arguments that were presented by one side or the other, this could have been put together, and that could be the reason, like that could be the reason it even exists. So there's that reality, but there's also this idea that like for the conservatives, for example, they think that this is somewhat of a victory, but the states that would be affected by this aren't the red states that already have some laws in place. But people forget Roe v. Wade actually prevented third trimester abortions, and getting rid of Roe v. Wade, if this is true, actually is not something for the Republicans to cheer for. In fact, all those blue states, you know, millions, tens of millions of people will now have no limitation on third trimester abortions, and can actually use this as a political football. But the Democrats now get to use this as a political football and fundraise constantly. So now you just have this Republicans pretending like they got a victory, and the Democrats using that pretend victory to fundraise. Because, like, let's be honest, this is probably, I mean, I'm only 33 years old, by the way. This is the worst administration in my lifetime. It has been a year and 5 months, and I have no doubt in my mind that this is the worst administration that I've ever experienced, and am likely to experience again, because obviously Joe Biden has a unique, like, ugliness to his aura, and has a unique level of apathy when it comes to getting things done for anybody but the elite, and that's just for domestically or abroad. So I think that this leak was well timed, because of the midterms coming up, obviously, because of the Pfizer leak, that the 10,000 document leak that just happened within the last couple of days, which apparently is showing that there's an efficacy issue with the jabby jab. Okay, it's 12. It's only had 12% of efficacy when we were told 98-99%. So that in and of itself, and I'm not a doctor, but I'm just saying that's us being told two different things, and that could have made the headlines instead if this didn't drop. Like, I mean, there are, like you said, infinite number of things that are coming out this week and next, and I would imagine over the next couple of months that would lead to a high level of scrutiny for the Democratic establishment and some members of the Republican establishment. Well, that may make people just start saying F both of them. You know, that's really where we're at.
Yeah, no, and fair analysis on all of that. But there's even more here because, hey, don't forget, there's still that conflict over there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going on. That's an issue as well. But here's what it all boils down to me. Beyond even the idea of, OK, they're going to play football with this, is it's the unreality of the game. let's just take the abortion issue for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And let's kick another reality. I love where you came at it. But let me throw something your way here. If this is irrelevant to women who have means. Okay, so even if you want to go at this from the Democratic side, which I would tend to and did most of my life, stand on that side and say, you know what, this is not my business. The sovereignty of the walking around grown person is what's important, and I have no right to make a judgment. Also, I'm not a scientist. I also know that, you know, when someone can be declared legally dead, their heart can be beaten, but no brain activity, you can pull a plug. So honestly, I look at it across the board and say, this is an issue that I don't even want to engage in.
Yeah. But, generally, that's where I'm at.
Yeah. Leave it as it is, because it seems to be the most sensible thing until somebody can scientifically prove that there is another way to look at this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I've stood on it. Again, a little older than you, but still reasonable. But let's go at it from the Democratic side. If you're a rich woman, you don't have this issue to begin with, because you make a private arrangement with a doctor. You pay them. It's kept private. That's the end of it. And rich women have had access to abortion a lot longer than 50 years.
Absolutely.
So a matter of access, it's only weighing on those that don't have the means to have a private relationship with a physician.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in my mind, again, this is an issue of, if anybody's rights are being challenged, it's specifically not all women, but it's specifically the women who do not have means. So again, it's a culture war issue in my mind.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I remember, by a lot of you, I'm not a fan of the culture war from either side. It's annoying. I mean, I don't know what else to call it, but it's just.
No, I'm with you there, but I'm just trying to go at it from the other side.
No,
right?
I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you, and it's. And it's, but you, what you see is, I mean, there was a tweet the other day. I want to say it was yesterday, and it was appalling. I mean, revealing and unsurprising, but still appalling nonetheless, where it was one of these elite celebrities came out and said, we'll see how these white supremacist Republicans feel about the anti-abortion laws when their daughter gets raped by a black man and gets pregnant. A liberal put that tweet up.
Yeah, how much ugly.
So who you
put out there, and oh, wait a minute, why is it that the liberal is now doing the birth of a nation routine?
Where, yeah, exactly. It's like, hold on.
Okay.
Well, who does that reveal more about? Like, because I most Republicans I know, I mean, I'm sure that there are like racist people that would get upset by something like that. I mean, but the rape would usually just be bad enough as it is, first of all, right? So shouldn't be qualified with the race or not. But they're like, the idea, the first thing that came to her mind was, yeah, this would really piss somebody off, is if their daughter got pregnant by a black man, they couldn't get an abortion. That would do it. Like, why would you think that? Oh, it's because that's something that's a fear that you have. That's that's a reality that you're scared to live in, but you're projecting it on Republicans, calling them the white supremacists. And but meanwhile, you're really exposing you yourself and how you really view black men, or how you think, even probably scarier, the country views black men.
Mm-hmm.
So it's dangerous territory that we're getting in, but you're right. Somebody like her, you think she has a problem getting an abortion?
No. No, and the other thing is, look, the disingenuous nature with which it's attacked from the other side again is really interesting. Where all of a sudden, and let's be honest, you can tell me about this, how you feel about it, but I always look at this and shake my head, where it's like, oh, and you know, it's often black babies that are aborted. So really, this is, and I go, man. Do I believe for a second you care about?
Yeah, exactly.
That? I mean, right. you don't care, and you don't care when black babies are shot in the street. You don't care when the system crushes them up. But it's a problem if a doctor aborts one. Well, what's the difference?
Like it's like you have a system where like for whatever reason we can go into the details about it, you know, but we know. That there are certain people who are on top, there are certain people who for some reason are for the majority kept on the bottom, okay? And we know that black people fall into this category, and we also know how, I mean, it's extremely difficult for a single black mother to lift herself out of poverty because, I mean, just from the perspective of generational wealth and security, that's right. Being removed from the majority of them, which is why some white women seem to have a higher success rate despite having a child at a young age, even if they do, right? They're still having their family around. They're still going to have security. They're still going to have somebody to babysit, things like that. So when you're talking about not allowing a black woman to have an abortion in this particular case, like those same Republicans, once that baby is born, are going to say, why is that woman relying on the system when she doesn't have generational wealth because of the 1994 crime bill, because of the drug era that was obviously predominant in the black communities, because of, you know, maybe their dad's dad got arrested for marijuana charges and was put in prison for 25 of life. And it's kind of messed up the family tree as far as access to wealth ever since, or even access to something as simple as voting, right? Or a corporate job. Like that, like the Republicans are then going to say, well, that child doesn't deserve help. And matter of fact, since you decide to get it by any means, and that can mean any number of things, how about you go ahead and book a hotel stay at hotel private prison where I can get paid for it, right? Mm-hmm. Or come work at my job for a very low wage, because odds of you making it out of that community and getting the college degree or your degree even meaning anything nowadays is extremely low. Right. Those Republicans don't care about the black babies being aborted. What they care about is one talking points. But it's just like they don't care about the quote unquote black on black crime in Chicago. Like, I wish like the people, they would care as much about the white on white crime. Like that happens a lot, too. I don't know why people back. Like, I mean, there's Asian on Asian crime, too. People who are around each other tend to kill each other. You know, that's what happened. I'm not going to go into a East Asian community and just start letting off rounds because from a random, like that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't happen often. So you're 100% correct. I can't stand it, man. Honestly, I cannot stand it. And it's literally Republicans will pretend they want to protect black babies protect and save black babies, where Democrats want to pretend like they want to protect and save black women. But yet and still, we've seen both parties throw each of those people respectively under the bus.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, mm-hmm. We're talking about a couple of them. This is just, and there's the status quo that people want to protect, by the way. Yeah. So, and that's the thing. You have virtue signaling, and that is a true thing. There is such a thing as virtue signaling.
Or virtual signaling is what I call it now. That's what it seems like everybody does now.
I might have to steal that. it is virtual signaling. Very good. I like it better. But either way, it's virtue and virtual signaling because you don't actually go out and do anything. You just make sure you make your point online somewhere, right? So it's virtual and it is virtue signaling because, again, just like with the examples you gave there, it's really revealing if you let somebody, you know, type more than three words. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Because
yeah.
All of a sudden, and I love how you went straight to Chicago, too, because there it is again. It's like, well, let's talk about Chicago. And it's like, I wasn't talking to you about Chicago. I'm talking to you about something like what you just said, which is, you know, let's face facts. You're going to commit crimes on the people you see. You know, what does thou covet? That which I see. Okay.
Yep. Well, yeah. I mean, that's
the way
facts.
Crime works, too. You're going to prey on the community you're in mostly. I know that, yes, there are occasions where people go into another section, which is, you know, self-segregated and decide that they're going to attack a racial group, a religious group, et cetera. Yes, indeed, that happens. But that's what makes the headlines. What happens on a daily basis is people that look very much like each other often kill each other. The people that are actually, you know, committing crimes, you know, robbing somebody, terrorizing somebody, et cetera, are all in a collective place, not just because of their skin tone or their religious affiliation, but because of their financial circumstance. And therefore, that is how a region is divided. And you have the white collar criminals. Well, they got more access to white collar people, so they might, you know, indeed prey upon them in that way.
And they do. And they have better, but they can afford better lawyers to fight those crimes. Right. So it just looks different because they put on a tie. But I guarantee you that one guy in Chicago who might have affected one or two lives in whatever way, that white collar criminal, who is probably, for all intents and purposes, a white guy, has harmed tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, whether it be, you know, through exploiting the stock market or purposely tanking the economy. Like, I mean, I know a guy who had to sue. He sued Bank of America because he saw that they were, you know, playing their games, and he was one of the top executives there. And they because he was Iranian, he was half Iranian, actually. And they were trying to smear his name and trying to say that he was associated with extremist organizations in Iran just so that nobody would take his accusations seriously. Right. Like, that, but that's, and he won the lawsuit, but nobody will ever know the guy, the people's names who are trying to throw his name in the mud, or ruin people's lives just so they can make another couple million, right? So it's, and you don't see the same concern, right? That's why I don't like, Elon Musk is a problem for me. I don't know how you feel about him, but he's been a problem for me. I'm black, right? I can't ignore the fact that his family became wealthy from the South African apartheid. And that he has literally done nothing to at least, like, I'm not saying give all your money back. I'm not saying that, right? It's kind of ridiculous. I can't hold him necessarily to the sin of his father, but I know that's where you got your wealth from. And that's where you got the launching, that was your launching pad to becoming the person you were today. And so all the billions that you're getting in subsidies from the U.S. government that has made you the billionaire that you are today, why can't you reinvest that into the South African community and start ensuring that they can start taking advantage of their land and resources like your family did? Like, that's a problem. And I don't believe that like Musk wants free speech. And I think that he has a lot of problems with like Neuralink, and his batteries are not as good for the environment as everybody pretends they are and things like that. But everybody, because he's like, the things that he has done or the problems that he has caused are kind of shrouded by a suit, if you will, like they're ignored.
Yep. Well, you know, Gil Scott Heron was kind of a prophet. You know, Whitey's got to go to the moon is all I'm saying. This kills me. You know, it's just, I'm going to stand on the side of Elon Musk because he's, why?
Why?
I can't figure that one out. Like, people that would normally say, look, I believe the billionaire class, the only way that you accrue that kind of wealth is through exploiting somebody. I mean, that's a guarantee. Okay.
That's a fact.
But Elon Musk, I mean, and that's the thing. You can't name me anything outside of a nation state. And then again, you know, we have whole other arguments as to what is political warfare and what is actual warfare and so on and so forth. But any individual who has amassed that kind of wealth, there is massive exploitation of people who are in vulnerable positions all along the way to accruing that as a guarantee.
I mean, the dude fired somebody and lost the lawsuit at Tesla because they got caught racially discriminating. Like, I mean, explicitly, they lost a lawsuit. This was like months ago.
Yeah.
And another guy like tried to out Tesla, like their auto drive feature wasn't really all that successful, to say the least. And he like just wanted to report on it, you know, like, because that's what you're supposed to do. And they fired him and tried to blackmail him. Mr. Free Speech himself. Or let's talk about the fact that, like, to be the richest man in the world, at least, you know, recorded richest man in the world, according to Forbes, that requires a certain level of government cooperation, specifically United States government cooperation. And like, I don't find it coincidental that SpaceX recently made this deal with the Pentagon, right? People don't know about that. SpaceX created a weapon system that can deliver any type of military ammunition or resource around the world in less than an hour. That's what the contract was for. So any weapon system.
Right.
He keeps talking about going to space, but that was what it was really about the entire time. Now, of course, you or I can't invest in the SpaceX, so how are we supposed to hold him accountable there? Like, Tesla has opened IPO, but now even with Twitter, Musk is about to take Twitter private the moment that the deal is signed and sealed. How do we hold him accountable there? It's the same way we hold Bezos accountable. We can't hold Bezos accountable, can we? Because he's so entrenched in the quote unquote swamp that is the U.S. technocracy. Like, that is how he got wealthy. These people had failing businesses that were saved by government subsidies through the venture capitalist firm IncuTel, which is literally a venture capitalist firm in Virginia that doesn't have to really reveal anything it invests in, even though they're behind like 93% of Silicon Valley success stories.
Right.
And Musk is a beneficiary of that. And everybody, my conservative friends are like, well, he's different than Bill Gates. Yo, that's crazy, because literally SpaceX and Microsoft are partners. So I'm not really sure. You know, this is easy information to find, you know?
Well, how does that math work out? You know, and another thing about that Twitter deal, because you and I didn't get a chance to discuss this. Of course, that was the story before all of these leaks again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Elon Musk is going to take it over. Good guy, bad guy, you know, always trying to put the white hat or the black hat on somebody. And, you know, there's that trope again. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. Why is it that people are so invested in Twitter that, A, it's worth that much? You know. Like, okay, it's worth that much. Fine. All right, I got you. But now, explain to me how it is that this has become the town square. Because you heard that phrase over and over again, like as if they handed out a memo, didn't you? You know, this is town square. This is like the global.
Well, the reason that actually became, it didn't used to be considered that, but then I want to say it was a federal court or the Supreme Court ruled that Trump couldn't block individuals because he's a politician. And the courts viewed Twitter as a public square. So my thing is, at that point, should it actually even be allowed to be owned by a private investor? And it, you know what I'm saying? Like, so right. Now we're in a whole different conversation. Yeah, this is a thing. That's why it was weird, because Kamala actually began blocking people and no one said anything about it. Everybody was like, well, hold up, y'all just told Trump he had to unblock everybody. But because like they have to be able to interact with public, and that's not just that. So that rule wasn't just for Trump, and they made it clear it was for all politicians and political officials. So it's like there. So when you get into that type of precedence, now we are talking about a public square, which is why what we're seeing becomes even more dangerous, right? Because you're talking about, if I'm an investor, if I'm like a Peter Thiel, which, you know, he has his own issues, but if I'm anybody that has a significant amount of money to invest. Is it really a fair fight if the guy who owns Tesla now owns SpaceX, and that guy is also he has the ability to get SpaceX partnered with the Pentagon? How could I ever compete with that if I have my own IPO? Mm-hmm. That's a slam dunk every single time. And as long as you're willing to do whatever the government wants, then you'll always be successful. Even as Facebook is failing, even as Meta has been an abysmal failure, somehow Facebook is still Facebook, right? But somehow, but Facebook came out of nowhere, overtook MySpace, and no one really still understands how that happened when no one liked Facebook, right? It's like you see that Google came out of nowhere and overtook Yahoo, and no one saw that coming. Everybody thought Google was goofy. Nobody, because the CIA and venture and IncuTel is mostly behind Google. And this is a consistent pattern. Elon Musk is not any different. In fact, I would say that he's almost probably worse than a lot of these people. But he's no different than Jeff Bezos. He's no different than Bill Gates. All of them have only gotten their billions not from innovation, but primarily from just sucking the teat of the government on our dollar at that. Right. To make it even worse, while they pretend like I'm just a smart investor. That's what happened.
There you go. But in truth, it's all of us have invested, and we just had no say in it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you know, we don't get the benefits from that, right? Like Twitter, does Elon Musk buying Twitter truly help you or I? Like, no, not really. Maybe it helps somebody, but it helps the conservatives who get the, you know, kiss. Am I allowed to cuss? I can't remember if I'm allowed to cuss.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I was just saying, it helps the people who are, you see Elon Musk is going on Twitter and people are kissing his ass and he's responding to it, and that's getting them attention. So is that not a conflict of interest?
See, all right. I thank you, because I'm not the only one.
Yeah, you know? It's ridiculous.
I can't understand this. It's like, how do you keep picking a hero out of these batches? You know what I'm saying? And it's like, okay, even when they talk about the media stuff, which, by the way, I also found the abject failure of CNN Plus to be really kind of hilarious.
That was a good day. It was a lot of bad days, but that was a good day. I was like, dang, they had to announce it that it was ending before the month was up.
It was like a couple days later. It was almost like that crash that Disney Plus had, except Disney Plus had, you know, something to fall back on. CNN Plus, yeah. Like, yeah, never mind.
See, they never found their MCU. They never found their Marvel, you know.
I mean, you know, they tried to bring Chris Wallace in. You can't replace Spider-Man with Chris Wallace. It ain't working. You know? I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's, you know, completely.
No disrespect to Chris Wallace necessarily, although maybe I could, but that's not the point. He ain't Spider-Man. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. But that is the overall, like, it's, and that's, it's funny that you're expressing my exact frustrations for the last couple of weeks. I mean, obviously for years, but it's, I mean, when I'm seeing friends who are just like anti-Bill Gates, rightfully so. And then you see people, why are people worried about Bill Gates buying up all this farmland? I'm like raising my hand like, no, I've been worried about it. I've been talking about this for like 4 or 5 years. What are y'all talking about? Like, there's a lot of us who've been worried about this. Warren Buffett's been doing the same thing. We've been screaming and waving our hands about this, actually. Y'all just didn't care, you know, until you're looking for an argument to distract away from your sycophancy. Our sycophantism of Elon Musk. Like, instead of acknowledging the actual problems with Musk, you're like, well, look at Bill Gates. Yeah, he's problematic too. I don't understand. Why can't we say both are problematic? What's the issue?
You see, and that's the thing, is even when I wind it back to the Gates Foundation and my complaints about what was going on with the vaccination program in Africa and all that, which, if you recall, they got busted there because a couple of people decided to say, you know, there's a funny thing going on with this tetanus shot, and something's wrong with this. The Gates Foundation must know something about it. You know, people are going, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. You know, it's just, and I'm like, yeah, well, now we look ahead and go, wait a minute, you know, they're again involved in some other vaccine, but it's not just on one continent, okay? And somehow they seem to know about the pandemic thing before it actually hit, and all this good stuff, and Event 201, and
the same guy who literally can't even prevent, like, it's his job to put together software, and he can't even prevent a damn virus on his computer or his software, but he's supposed to, he's not even a doctor, but all of a sudden he's an epidemiologist. He can prevent me from getting the virus. Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense, guys. Can't even do the job that he's been doing his whole life correctly, but now let's pretend like he's an epidemiologist.
And plus, if you look at the list of just, you know, Microsoft updates you got to deal with constantly, you knew there was going to be boosters. I mean, come on.
Exactly. I know, right?
Like,
and the boosters work just as well as the updates on Microsoft.
Yeah, right. Not at all. Thanks. And then patches. What are they going to call the patches when it comes? All right, never mind. It don't matter because you know what? Nobody's going to listen. They're going to go, no. You know, you still don't understand. Elon Musk is a different kind of guy. And yeah, okay. It was real history. So moving forward, though, into the rest of the melee, let's talk about Pfizer. Oh, man.
Well, hold on. You know, the Disinformation Governance Board might not appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Because, you know, two quick things for me to lose money on in the past, you know, couple of years is, first of all, not falling into line with the timeline that they gave us regarding the, you know, COVID-19, whatever it is. Okay. I admit that there is something out there that has made people sick, and that's just a fact. But. Mm-hmm. Is it the big threat? Is it the thing that needed to mobilize, you know, the whole of government and the media and everybody seeming to march in one direction, one way or another, to force feed people some new experimental piece of work that they said, nah, it's experimental. But you know what? We were experimenting on it a long time, so don't worry about that. I guess every cancer cure is good now because they've been working on that for 50, 60 years, right?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be surprising, like, because this would be the first time in the history of literally all of mankind that science got it right the first time. And that's like, you know, the odds of that are still pretty high, right? You know? And if you ever question, like, hey, maybe science, you know, got this one wrong, like it's gotten other stuff wrong in the past, like maybe it could be. Well, no, if you say that, then you're a conspiracy theorist because – science is, no, what did Fauci say? I am. If you're questioning the vaccine, then you're questioning me, and that means you're questioning science. He said that on TV.
Yeah, that kind of sounds like what a cult leader says. Where it's like, no, you're questioning the word of God. I'm giving you the word of God. Therefore, I am God. You're questioning God. What's wrong
with you? Did you hear about this snake venom thing?
Wait a minute. Snake venom?
There is this. I watched this long, detailed interview of epidemiologists and researchers that were breaking down, like, the ingredients to the vaccines, but also breaking down what the virus itself was made of. And they were like, the bad stuff was a distraction, or else they would have never talked about it, just from a logic standpoint. I'm like, oh man, that logic is actually pretty sound, actually, knowing what we know and how the media works. And they were like, yeah, there's snake venom components, but that would only be if they were manufacturing it. Like, that would be the only way that it could have gotten into the virus, and they would have known. In order to make the vaccine that they did with the snake venom components involved, they would have had to known that the snake venom was involved with the virus. And so, in other words, how did the snake venom get there? How did it get released? And somebody suggested that it's actually something that is flowing through waterways. And that is part, and so you're like washing your food with it. And that's why some people, like, you would see they're going to like a Thanksgiving dinner or a party where everybody eats the same food. And then all of a sudden everybody's getting it, and it will make you think that everybody's getting it because they were all in the same airspace. But instead, they were eating the same food, drinking the same water, the same Kool-Aid, same tea, whatever. And that's actually that could have been what cause the spread, which is why you see the spread was weird. It was like in certain pockets. And it's like, for me, I never got COVID-19, but my wife did, and her whole family did. But she saw me. I saw her, because I went to go pick up my dog and bring her back, and she was taking care of her family. She kissed me and everything. I didn't get anything. I didn't even feel kind of sick, but somehow she was going through it. And that never really sat right with me, because I'm like, I mean, I'm pretty healthy guy, but everybody else I know, when they talk to their family or go see groups of their family, they were getting it. But then I thought about the events. I'm like, oh wow, that was for a Thanksgiving dinner. Oh wow, that was for a birthday party. Oh, that was for a cookout. Oh, that's interesting. Like, and you start seeing the pattern of, oh man, these people are eating and drinking the same thing. And the way that I'm gonna see if I can find that video. I'm gonna send it to you. That it had me thinking, like, it was like, man, I was trying not to assume the most evil possible outcome. Like, cause unfortunately, I think you and I both know, usually the most evil, like, conclusion that you can come up with is likely what's going on. That's what we've been, it's that bad now. And I was like, man, I really hope that this is just a dumbass who leaked something that I believe that we were researching bioweapons. I mean, we just admitted that we had them in the Ukraine. So, like, I'm not surprised by that part, but I was like, there's no way that they would leak this on purpose. There's no way that they would. I'm like, please don't tell me that we're dealing with these kind of people, and that there are so many dozens and, well, at this point, thousands of elites willing to push this agenda, because that is terrifying on an entirely different level. And I just keep thinking back, like, man, that's probably true. God damn it.
It makes more sense, but it makes more. Okay. As crazy as that sounds, right? It actually makes more sense, because here's something else you're not allowed to talk about, right? Which is that people who are in a particular area, because they're exposed to the same air, the same water that's affected by particular local things, yeah, they tend to have the same health outcomes.
Yes, exactly.
So your actual geographical location will determine your health a whole lot faster than what it is you decide you want to exercise with, XYZ, you name it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a fact that nobody wants to talk about, because literally, if you start drawing lines around areas, okay, that are, like, particularly there's a hot spot here, like, everybody's heard of Cancer Alley, right?
Okay. I've never heard of that, actually.
You never heard of Cancer Alley?
No.
Okay. So there's this one area, in the U.S. where the cancer rate is something like 50 times higher.
Holy crap.
And among the rest of the population, right? And it so happens that there are a whole bunch of biochemical plants that are there.
Of course. Can't imagine if those things are correlated.
Yeah, imagine those things are. But number two, when you start to take a look at other areas that share similar characteristics, you find that there is indeed, first of all, a financial correlation. Only poor people live next to all the biochemical plants, first of all. Mm-hmm. Secondly, guess what? It's usually, and again, poor people, yes, includes everybody on some level, but coincidentally, it is the darker skinned people that are in these areas as well, coincidentally, where concentration is highest. Now, I could tell you about an area in New Jersey where one particular chemical company named Ciba Geigy had contaminated the groundwater so bad, and they were trying to figure out, you know, why it seemingly like every 4-year-old had to go through leukemia before they got to kindergarten, right?
Wow.
You know, and I can tell you that that was not a racially drawn line, okay? Mm-hmm. But in the majority of these cases where you find like a sort of a confluence of things like that, where there's a chemical plant, and then there's also, you know, a dumping ground for stuff like shredded shingles and things like this.
Yeah, I mean, there's no white mom there to speak on behalf of the black kids and brown people. So, you know, it ain't going to get – there's not going to be a lot of attention brought to it because, you know, like they say in the Bronx, if Stacy goes missing, it's, you know, it's all over the nightly news. Right. But if, you know, if Tanisha or you know, a Latina goes missing, then it's just, oh, she's a runaway. You know, that's how it goes. And that's – and it, so that's a consistent pattern, and you're right. I mean – In Africa, a lot of countries were barely getting COVID. Like, I mean, barely.
Right.
So you're talking about in Nigeria, a country with, I want to say, what, 200 million people. Like, a bad day or a bad week for them was 500 cases of COVID. Like, right. That was it. And then before recently, unfortunately, before the vaccine got there, not Trinidad, Haiti, there was, like, no COVID. It was almost none. And then when they brought the vaccine there is when it happened. But then when you think about it, Haiti's, you know, waterway is so disconnected from the world. I mean, Haiti's like out there. It is disconnected from a lot of the Western world. And although they eat the same food, they're washing it with different water. Right. Whereas like in California, good God, I mean, almost all of it is like a manufactured, like, you know, they all do a lot of, I think it used to be imported. I know, at least in LA, right? They used to take water and bring it to LA. My dad used to do it. He used to help with it. So like, they're all drinking out of the same water. And if you look at those numbers in California, same thing with New York. You look at those numbers in New York, these people are all drinking the same water, cleaning their food, the same water, eating it from the same places, buying their food from the same places. So it would make sense that COVID spread as fast as it did there. Whereas like in Miami, for example, or South Florida in general, you might have one outcome in Fort Lauderdale and a different outcome in Miami. But then you go a little bit further down south to the Keys and you have like almost no cases.
Right.
Even though that's a high tourist attraction and you have all these people coming from out the country. So it's a lot more complicated, but it's like a simple and complicated, right? It's like more complicated in the sense of people are being told one thing. And it seems to follow conventional logic, but then when you actually dive into the logic that they're being told isn't actually conventional. It's, right. It's manufactured. It's invented. It's created to suit an agenda, working backwards from their conclusion. Like you have Bill Gates already talking about preparing for another pandemic. It's like, bro, the way y'all describe it, the way that y'all handled this pandemic was an abject failure. That's, right. You know, that's the way they describe it. So why would I then go to you to prevent another one? Matter of fact, why do we even have this one? Y'all can't even agree on why this pandemic happened and persisted for as long as it did. But now you're the one who's also trying to tell me this is how we prevent another one, though, even though I can't even tell you how the last one even happened.
Yeah, well, I love that. You know, it's like, well, can you tell me how this crime occurred? No, I cannot, but I can tell you how we can prevent it.
Exactly.
They do this all the time. And I'll tell you something else that's funny, too, is because, you know, with the document dump with Pfizer, I found it amazing. We didn't even need this because we had the media talking about, look, this is the only way. This is the only way. It didn't matter. They all had a different way of pushing it, right? You know, the corporate media structure, because, well, coincidentally, they all have sponsorship deals with the companies that make this stuff.
Right.
But anyway, you know, this is the only way. This is the only way. You're gonna prevent this. You're gonna prevent that. You're gonna prevent the third thing. The initial documentation, which was made publicly available from the scientists who conducted the studies, even said, no, you're not gonna stop the spread with this. No, you're not. And I went, wait a minute. They already told you this. Now that's not what Don Lemon's saying, but that's what this scientist who wrote the report said. Okay. So Don Lemon tells me to trust the science. He's not trusting it because he obviously didn't read the report. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hold on. The science is supposed to be like a scientific method, and it's literally fluid. I mean, you literally cannot just trust the science, because by definition, science doesn't trust itself, or you're not sciencing correctly. As you have, like, the moment that there is a breakthrough discovery, there is somebody who is working to say you didn't do good enough.
Right. And that is actually the reason why the methodology is always fluid, because you must continuously retest and be aware of any changes in the circumstance, which by definition, even looking at this, like, cause I know a lot of people looked at it and thought they were supposed to see it like it was a graphic on a Hollywood movie, right? You remember at the end of, what was it, Planet of the Apes, one of the newer ones, might have been War for Planet of the Apes. I forget which one, but where the pandemic that actually kicks off and destroys humanity's ability to speak and all this, right? Where this happens, you see a map at the end where it seems like the virus spreads, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at the realistic way with which they tracked, you know, the data, and then you go and look at all of their tracking, even, you know, the propaganda tracking, all of it, none of it is consistent with that. Where you see it spread, okay, this is how it exploded. It just continued to move outward. It didn't just, you know, become a hot zone that just got bigger and bigger, right? Mm-hmm. It did that because consistently what we had was inconsistency. That's why we could prove actually that the whole masking thing was almost useless, because in places where they enforced it heavily, they had rises, they had falls. In places where they didn't, or they did it loosely, rise and fall. And none of it was consistent with any of those behaviors that were supposed to be prophylactic, preventative, the vaccine, none of it.
Or even consistent with what they were saying. Because they were like, well, actually, even if you wanted to prevent some type of, like, contamination, you need an N90 mask. But they were just like, or is it N95? N95 mask to right. even be somewhat effective. Even that. And they were like, yeah, but you just wear any mask. It's good. It's fine. Like, and now they're finding out that people are having plastic in their lungs.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow, I wonder what possibly could have caused such a thing. Maybe wearing a bunch of plastic over their mouths all day, every day,
well, you while know they're at work. Is. Yeah, you know what the answer is? Ban menthol cigarettes, right? I'm just saying, you know, because, I mean, and by the way, I don't necessarily disagree that should have been gotten rid of a long time ago, because, you know, I knew people that... I don't know, in the 80s and 90s were telling me stuff about, you know, this is probably not good to inhale. Yeah.
I mean, with menthol cigarettes, the thing about that is, right, when you have an industry that is pushing this on people and then literally adding, I mean, tobacco in and of itself is fine. Like, you don't see people who are smoking cigars dealing with the same issues that you're seeing people who smoke cigarettes on a daily basis. And I live in Miami. Right, you're talking about these dudes 89 years old at the Domino's table on Calle Ocho smoking a fat stogie. Like, they don't have the issues that a person who smokes cigarettes. Why? Because of all the additives to make it purposely addictive.
Right.
And when you have an entire industry pushing that, now you're in a different trajectory. This isn't like marijuana. I feel like there's not like an industry pushing it on people. It's like a culture, but the culture was almost born out of rebellion. Because of all the positive benefits. But, like, you don't see the pharmaceutical industry pushing marijuana for all of its positive health applications. No. But you did see, for whatever weird reason, doctors pushing cigarettes on TV at one point. Like, yep. You know, like a cigarette a day, you know, like, you know, it's good for you. Like, why? Like, no, it's a cigarette. There's nothing good about this.
No, and look, and back to that whole point you made about, you know, the corporate criminal versus the street thug. Okay, you know, let's get down to it again. None of the Sacklers are in prison, are they?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And, well, you got to lock up drug dealers. Well, let me tell you.
Good God. I got some, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always tell people, when it comes to vaccines, specifically this vaccine, mm-hmm. I'm like, guys, I'm not gonna lie to you. For some reason, I'm just not really like I don't have a lot of desire to trust the people who are just telling me, like, not even 15, 20 years ago, that marijuana was killing me, giving me cancer, and making me autistic. Like, those are the same people who are now like, hey man, this drug, this vaccine here, it'll save your life if you get it right now. I know we haven't really tried it on anybody. I know the ingredients are a little suspect. I know this is literally experimental, but we've paid a lot of money to not have Congress people worry about any of that stuff. And this is our industry now. So I need y'all to just trust us. Cause like literally, you know, like that Pfizer, Moderna, all these companies, whatever lawsuits that come their way, and there will be lawsuits, we all know that. Yeah. You think they care? They've been paid off in it well in advance.
Right.
To make sure that the lawsuits do nothing to the business that they did on behalf of the government for the last 2 years. They're going to get sued for what? Two, three, four, five. Let's just say even $10 billion cumulatively. You think they cared when they made $300, $400 billion?
No. See, that's the thing. It's just a tax. It ain't. It's no, like sales tax. Okay, that's about what matters to them. Seriously, I know people don't like sales tax, but I'm just saying, if you're going to pay 7-8% on something, it's not really going to affect your desire to engage in that transaction. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just okay. So I got to pay an extra 7%. Yeah, I'll do that. Why not? It's not a big deal. I mean, and that's the thing about this. Okay, trust these people. All right, you're good friends at Johnson & Johnson who couldn't figure out a way, you know, the lightest element on the table of elements, right? Talc. They couldn't figure out a way to make that without putting cancer causing stuff into it. You're good friends at Johnson & Johnson, although they out how to make a much more addictive version of opiate. Okay, because they figured out, well, we don't have to just squirt a flower and actually drain the stuff. No, we'll take the whole thing and we'll make opium straw. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right? Yep.
Yeah, that's what they're good at, and trust them all you want. I mean, embalming fluid into baby shampoo and whatever else. Yeah. No, trust them. Also, trust your friends at Moderna. Take a look at the list of lawsuits they got for, you know, giving people, like, cholesterol drugs and stuff that's supposed to stop joint pain, not by actually being a painkiller, but by actually, you know, ending inflammation, which then ends other processes in your body so you get to die so your knees don't ache. No, that's all cool.
Yeah. Hey, or the fact that this lawsuits of like a lot of the lawsuits, at least I think from Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, are like literally from the government. The lawsuits are by the government. They lost lawsuits to the government that have not given them billions of dollars and telling us to trust them.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, is that the government who turns around and signs off on stuff like OxyContin, right? They turn around and they sue them over the opioid epidemic in order to get some, because they end up laying out way too much money in the wake of their profit. You know, they need to get their cut back a little bit because they're laying too much money. So, you know, I understand that transaction, but people think that's a victory for the people.
And no, it's not. Until I see somebody going to jail. No, not somebody. People. I need to know who look at, because if you or I, let's say that I was a manager and I got a report somewhere that said, hey, you know, being in this, you know, having your employee work in this very specific environment could be deadly to them. And I ignore it because my company was making like 2% more a year. And I got this report. Now, obviously, most times the CEO or CEO is not going to go down. You middle management, you saw it, you ignored it. You're probably going to go to jail for it. You probably, and that's because it's criminal negligence. That's what it's called, right? And if anybody else would do that, that's exactly what would happen. Does intent matter? No, not in those particular situations. It could have been a total accident. Should you have known? Okay, that's what makes it negligence. And if somebody gets harmed by that, that's what makes it criminal negligence. But what we are seeing is criminal negligence on a historic scale. Right. Like a historic scale. I mean, there is a very good chance, based off of the Pfizer reports, that more people have died from the vaccine than have died from actually having COVID.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, especially kids, because the kids weren't dying from COVID. So if any kid died from the vaccine, it's a problem.
Exactly. If one of them does, because that's one way more than, you know, 1,000% above what was. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you know what it is? It's a three-letter difference, right? And I'll tell
CIA.
You that. Well, this makes me have to bring up Freeway Ricky Ross, who, by the way, congratulations. He's apparently doing really well in his legal cannabis business right now. So good luck to him. But, you know, and I like the guy. I interviewed him. I enjoyed his company. We commiserated over certain things. Here's what it comes down to. You know, when he was able to set a mechanism in motion in order to peddle his wares, not a problem. Now, of course, he was getting that from the CIA and the CIA.
Exactly.
It's their own. But the thing is, what is the real difference between him and, say again, the Sackler family, right? Or you go to any of these other, and by the way, a lot of them benefited off of the generics and this and that. And really, mm-hmm. the Sacklers just got smart enough to say, we're going to lose our patent on one drug. Let's just repackage it again.
Oh, let's be clear. There is a difference between them. The moment that Freeway would get involved, like he wouldn't have a choice. If the government approaches him, there is zero choice. And if he disappears, nobody cares and nobody knows about it. Those right. families go actively seeking the government's assistance. They don't mind. Like, they are active sociopaths who don't mind getting in bed with the government to get whatever they want, to become as wealthy as they would like, and to build whatever empire they want to. Yes. Like, but the black community or the drug dealers in those situations, what do you do when the CIA approaches you? In the 90s and 80s of all times, nobody's going to care. Like, what are you going to go to the news?
Well, first,
get you before you get to the car.
See, but first you might not notice because you rose to their attention. See, that was exactly. The thing about Ricky is that he was so intelligent at what he was doing, and he started out real basic. It's not like he had this plan in his mind. It was like, well, how do you make Ready Rock? And that just, you know, and I say again, listen to that interview with me if you're listening to my show. And Ricky, I had a weirder conversation with him off air. but it was great, man. And like I said, But here's the thing. See, Ricky only had the CIA. They eat their own. So no problem to let him go to prison. But you see, if you're the Sacklers, not only do you actively seek the support of the whole government approach, but you get the DEA and you get
ATF,
FDA. See, it's a three-letter difference. The CIA works if you want to kill people. But truthfully, if you want to do business long term, you got to work with the DEA and the FDA.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's the way that works. So that was Ricky's only real mistake. Other than that, he's a brilliant businessman. So I hope that he absolutely becomes the number one best-selling guy in the cannabis market worldwide.
I know, especially because, what are the odds of him actually being put in prison for that long? Like, once again, if he decided, you know what, I don't like this, I want to do something else, I want to take a step back, I think I'm going to get caught, like, would that ever have been allowed?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the things that I think about in situations like that. Like, I remember there was a sheriff in California who came out and he said, oh yeah, the drug problems in California were brought by our police department or really the feds. But he's like, yeah, we were told to do this, this, and this. We were given weapons. We were given drugs to put in these communities, to plant in these. I mean, it's a whole interview. I mean, excuse me, it was he barged into like the courtroom or like a city council meeting to talk about it.
Yeah, you're talking about Mike Rupert when he showed up. The CIA, the former CIA director was there, deputy CIA director was there, and he goes, yeah, well, look, I worked with the LAPD, and I know that we brought drugs into these.
Yeah, like, that's crazy. And it's like, that doesn't. How does that not make the news?
Yeah, well.
You know, it's a pretty big deal. Like, you know, people will call like certain rappers and community activists paranoid for saying something like that, even though it's widely known. I mean, I'm one of the most famous quotes from Boys in the Hood. Like, you think that we know how to get automatic weapons and that we know how to get cocaine? Cocaine is white man's drug. We don't get access to cocaine unless it got brought here. You know, like, we don't know. We don't have those connections. Those connections seek us out, not the other way around.
Well, it was a little strange, but, you know, go to New Jack City if you want to go to some Wesley Snipes. Not one of us owns a poppy field.
Poppy field, a boat.
Yeah, you know, nobody making Uzis in Harlem.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
And that was on the other coast. I present that because, again, that's one of the more real movies that, I mean, it was a little unrealistic, I know. And, you know, not every community is going to have an Ice-T and Judd Nelson to show up. But I'm just saying that the way that business runs and that guy sitting there going, look, this is what's here. And I'm just working with the system that is in front of me.
Yeah,
is where I'm at. And that's where
with the limited options presented to black men at the time. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I was in those places too. I mean, as I've revealed on this show, look, long before I knew how to ask a girl to dance, I knew how to whack up a supply of heroin. I knew how to, right? Because that was what was called upon in the community where I was, where everybody was broke.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, blind as I was, I knew exactly how to handle that stuff. And people that think, you know, that ridiculous, you know, oh, fentanyl is nothing new. That was available to us in the early 80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's been a thing. I mean, I live in South Florida, man. I worked in Boca. Good God. Like, geez, I learned way too much about drug addiction and heroin. I work in Boca. Everybody in there is in the, you know, in the recovery community. And I mean, I've been here, when I heard it, they were like, oh, fentanyl, this year, fentanyl is a problem. I'm like, it's been a problem. It's been here. It's been all over the country.
Yes.
It's anywhere where you can track their, opioid addiction hotbeds, there's fentanyl.
Yeah.
It's been a thing.
But the thing is, I mean, in New York, New Jersey area, early 80s, I'm telling you right now, we already had it. And it just wasn't used the same way. But it was used to whack up a supply, because sometimes you get something, it's cut up, and you gotta step it back up. And you could use that because it was way cheaper to get your hands on. You could actually make it. Mm. Okay. You couldn't necessarily make the, anyway, why am I doing this with you? It don't matter. I'm just saying to you that people that want to look at a certain problem and think it's something new quite often forget that, you know what? There's a whole other part of America. I call it invisible America, because it's that part that nobody wants to see. And, you know, yes, indeed, there is a racial component to it, but it is more about keeping the people down that are down. And it's more about making sure that they only have those limited options. And frankly, at the end of the day, yes, it was easier to go after people who were darker, because guess what? A lot of America didn't give a damn. You know, just like school shootings, quite honestly, I'm going to close on this. Funny enough, school shootings, because recently people were talking about the anniversary of Columbine and this and that. And, you know, I'm saying to myself, yeah, that was the day that happened in a mighty white neighborhood, as far as I'm concerned, because there was violence, gun violence in schools and all that stuff all the time. And the
news
even bothered to write about it. So, you know, I
used to be terrified to go to high school. I lived in Fayetteville at the time, off Strickland Bridge. Mm-hmm. And they would literally call it Fayetteville.
Yeah.
That's what it was called. Like, I was like, hold up, what are they called? I was like, yeah, they're like, it's called Fayette. Now I'm like, okay, so I got to go to high school. They're like, mama, go to private school.
You're really quickly getting acquainted with something called homeschooling, and you want to do that. Yeah, I get it.
But you're right, man. It was a problem in most, but you are also right that the suburb, they had no idea. They thought that was something you see on TV.
Yeah,
you know
right.
What I'm saying? Like, it was Hollywood.
Right. And again, you know, with hillbilly heroin coming around, it was like, okay. And that's what they used to call it, by the way, is when the pills went out, I'm like, opioid epidemic is brand new. Well, I'm sorry. I was on the streets in New York in the 1970s as a little kid. And guess what? I know that this is not new. Yeah. This is not new, but you didn't care about it when it was, you know, north of 125th. You didn't care, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
It was. And so, all right. I'm going to leave it at that. Nico House, man, look, where can people go and check out what you're doing and what's going on and your daily struggle to maintain your sanity online? Where can they do that now?
You can find me on Twitter, for the time being, at Real Nico House, NIKO. And you can find me on Instagram at Real Nico House, TikTok at Real Nico House, Rockfin, of course, at Nico. You can find me basically any and everywhere.
Excellent. And you know what? We're going to get you back on. Like I said it last time, and we did it, but we're going to get you back on again as soon as you're available, because I got a feeling there's some upcoming events.
Woo!
Okay, you know, I'm doing a little prestidigitation here. Upcoming events that you and I are going to need to discuss, and we didn't even get to the big ugly tonight, which I thought we were gonna. But you know what? I'm better off. This flowed perfectly, and I thank you for your time, sir.
Of course, man. Of course. Thanks for having me.
Anyway, guys, Nico House, and yes, N-I-K-O, and the word House, Nico House, real Nico House on Twitter and all that, like he said, and I'll give you some links in the show description. Stick around. The Ocelli Effect will be back after this.
That's what's so funny. I switched glasses when your back was turned. Ha ha, you fool. You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia, but only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
When a fan of the Ocelli Effect calls in to the Ocelli Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JT Sicilian, all of the guests that you have, how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Ocelli.com.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I say, oh, wow, beautiful people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. Chuck Ocelli.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com, but you could be hearing us some other time, some other place, and via some other methodology. Now, Ocelli.com might be challenged again today if you're having troubles navigating the website. It does appear to be functional, but, I don't know. The last week's worth of shows and stuff just evaporated. So I was working on that problem coming up to airtime, but had to do this. So here we are. And what the hell, man? Who knows what it'll be like by the time you guys are actually listening to this, the majority of you. So welcome to Wednesday. Jeffrey Matt is with me now. I haven't had too many conversations with Jeffrey Matt lately. That's for sure. I think the last time we actually got together was for the tribute to Jordan Maxwell, which, I was going to kick off this hour talking about Canadian politics with Jeffrey Matt. But instead, I think I'll switch gears because weird little bit of, I don't know, unpleasant feedback I got related to the Jordan Maxwell tribute. And you know what? It just came to my mind now to share it with Jeffrey Matt. And usually I do share these things with him, but him and I haven't been talking or interacting as much lately as we used to. I think I'm giving full disclosure here, Jeffrey. Am I doing some injustice here? And also, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Chuck. Thanks for having me back on. I was unaware of this feedback. But you know, as long as it's constructive, if there's something that needs to be clarified or to address any concerns, especially if it's a concern that we can, you know, address and solve. You know, I'd like to have that opportunity, but I'm curious to see what it is.
Yeah, well, what it was is that, it's not about Jordan. It was people who were honoring Jordan, you know, and saying how deserving he is of a lot more than just the, you know, the tributes and things like that that people have put out given his passing. But they were stating that basically I was among the rest of these people that Jordan had said at one time in an interview that, look, you know, when I die, there's going to be a bunch of tributes by people who didn't know me and things like that. And sort of putting me in this category of you're trying to benefit off of Jordan's death, which I tried to address some of these individuals myself, and I gave up because they do not know the history. It's not true. I have never made a single slim dime off of Jordan Maxwell. Nothing. Not a thing. Matter of fact, if the whole truth were to be known and somebody wanted to examine the books, they would find that a couple of times I might have given him small amounts of money, never taken from him. So that's it. And the only thing he ever gave me, really, you know, in a tangible sense, in a, you know, monetary value sense, he gave me a membership to a website once. He did that, but I wasn't asking for it either. He just did it, right? So I never asked him for anything. I never got anything out of him. I didn't benefit off his death. I didn't monetize his tribute show. I'm not this kind of guy. I'm not a vulture, first of all. But yeah, there was a few people that kind of got nasty with me, like, you're just trying to benefit off his death. And, I was like, first of all, you know, the people I had on that show was one of them being you and the other one being Aaron Franz was because your guys I know pretty well who also had experiences with Jordan one way or another. And yours on a very personal level. I mean, it was obvious. You even, very generously gave me a picture of the two of you. Which, quite frankly, I had a couple of people write to me that were not unfriendly who said, oh, I didn't even picture Jeffrey Matt looking like that. I said, okay. You know, people always do that, though. They don't, you know, if they've never seen your face before, they're always surprised. You know what I mean? But outside of that, I was kind of disturbed by this. I'm like, you know, what is wrong with you people? I'm not benefiting. Where is my monetary benefit for putting this out? What, I'm on YouTube? You see commercials there? I'm not putting commercials there. YouTube does. I don't get paid for that. I'm not monetized on YouTube, okay? So I don't know where it is I'm gaining off of Jordan. I never took a thing from that man. I tried to give things to him, and I also gave to him. And I encouraged others to give to him. I never took a thing from him. So I found that particularly, like, offensive, but it was only a small group of people, and I know what their intent was, is that they felt as though, you know, look, he had been exploited a lot, and that's true, but I'm not one of the people who was doing that. So, you know, you got the wrong guy is all I'm saying when it comes to this. Jordan and I, you know, look, we weren't like closest of friends necessarily, but we had a friendly relationship, and no, I never met him even face to face, but that was it. This was my friend. This was my friend. This was somebody who taught me things. And on occasion, I tried to teach him, and on a very rare occasion, I might have. But that was it. It was an interaction. It was an honest one. And so, you know, screw you if you think I'm benefiting off him. Not you, Jeffrey. But, you know, I never benefited off of Jordan Maxwell. And Jeffrey Matt would know, actually, if I did. And I'm very sure that he also knows that my behaviors and other things where there have been people who have approached me outside of Jordan's inner circle. Jeffrey's also known about that stuff over the years. And probably there was a way to, you know, turn around and, I don't know, leech off of him somehow. But since it was never in my mind, I never did it. Anyway, I don't know if you want to say anything about that, but I just found it irritating.
Well, look, I don't remember the exact wording of this, but I'll just give a synopsis of it. Some will understand what I'm saying is that whenever criticism is given out, there's different types, and the two big ones I've come across, I've noticed, is that one of them is that they like you, but they don't like what you just said. They don't like, and I'm not talking about you, Chuck, or anything. The critique will be, you like the person, but you really disagree with what they're saying. You don't like the way they're saying it, but you sort of like them. That's why they're extra frustrated, is because they like you. They've been rooting for you, but you said something that didn't sit well with them. So that's one way of critiquing it. And then there's just the people who have ill intent. And I think it's probably more in the category of, you know, it's probably a little bit of both. I don't know what the percentage would be, but I value any kind of, you know, concern, because the thing is he has been taken advantage of, and it's understandable if some, but I don't think Chuck has anything to do personally. I've never come across any situation at all where I wouldn't come on the show basically if Chuck was not saying what he's saying. He's always been, you know, super respectful. And quite honestly, I feel as if Chuck got a very special opportunity with Jordan. I think that really nobody else that I'm aware of has, or he did like a 24 or 25 part series with Jordan. And that wasn't monetized. It was made available on his website with these like super archives that he's doing. And, you know, nothing's free in this world. So if he's going out of his way to bring Jordan's material out there, I don't see that as freeloading. I see that as a great service to those who want to know. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I really don't believe any claim that Chuck was somehow profiting. But like I said, you know, I can understand. I'm trying to look at the other person's perspective.
Yeah.
Not towards you, Chuck, but just saying, you know, enough is enough. Jordan's been through a lot. And they've been following him on and off for years, and they sort of know some of the story. And even myself, when I first came on the radio, it wasn't with you, Chuck. Someone who didn't know me assumed I was one of the people who didn't treat him right, and so lumped me in with that, you know, those people. And later on, they realized I wasn't part of it. But you know, it's understandable to a certain degree, because people care. There's people, a lot of people out there who care about Jordan's work and his person, and would have loved to have been able to, you know, have conversations with him in any way, shape, or form. So I just want to just, you know, let the people know who care about Jordan. We really appreciate you. So I know I do.
And I'm going to tell you, I understand the reflex, right? And the thing was that Jordan did make a statement at one point that there would be a bunch of tributes to him afterwards, and it would be mostly by people who didn't, you know, really care about his work and things like that. And I get it. And that's true. I guarantee you there were people who put out, you know, my Jordan Maxwell special right after he passed, that really just, you know what, wanted your clicks or wanted you to, you know, help bring up their numbers on their whatever they were doing. And you add Jordan's name to it, that will happen. You know, I was never monetized, but I mean, there was videos that have now been taken down, by the way, on YouTube and stuff that, you know, in the days when I was legitimately only getting like 1,000 views on videos on YouTube, nowadays it's pathetic. Don't even look at the numbers. But when I was getting that, and then Jordan would come on and 80,000 views would show up because so many people wanted to hear what he had to say.
Right.
And look, I was more than happy to just put that out there. I never made anything on that and never asked for anything on that. I just, you know, here it is. This is what I do. And Jordan, as I said, was part of my, you know, philosophical intellect effectively, whether I knew it or not, he had taught me things, and some of the material that he had put out had influenced others who taught me things. So I recognized a founding teacher in my own personal philosophy, and maybe that's, you know, a little arrogant and self-centered, but that's what that was, and that's why I respected and cared about him so much, because he just made so much sense to me above many other people, and he freely gave it out, and, you know, that was the thing. I appreciated that and was proud and happy to do it with him. That's all I ever wanted. So, you know, but, and I understand the instinct. Again, it's like, because a lot of people were just doing things like that. And I'm sure that some of these people that put these things out, you know, I want to talk to you about Jordan Maxwell today. And they spent an hour and a half telling you, you know, what they thought of him, which I wasn't going to do on my show. I brought you guys on to comment a little. And what did we do? Mainly, let him speak again. Right. And say, look, these are great things that he said. Listen to the different time periods and stuff he was saying. And, you know, still, like, let him continue to speak. Yes, that was the idea behind what I did. And I don't feel bad about it, but I did get a little irritated. It was like, why are you guys pointing this at me? You know, but anyway, I'll leave it at that, Jeffrey Mack, because, again, it still sucks that he isn't here. Not a big surprise or anything. I don't feel as though, you know, some people, oh, you think there was a conspiracy or no, look, he was ill for a long time. And eventually, you know what, no matter who you are, death wins. Okay. So that's how I view it. And I was definitely sad, and I know you were and still are. And, you know, so is Aaron. So is anybody who was actually touched by somebody, yeah. You know. That's the thing. It doesn't even matter if it's Jordan Maxwell. In fact, if somebody touches your life in a significant way, and then they're gone, and if you think I'm, you know, just talking to hear myself talk here, no. Think about this. A musician who dies, who created something that touched you, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, cool to say it, or like this Naomi Judd recently died. Now, she didn't touch me very much, but her music might have touched somebody. if she did, and she's gone, you might feel a little sadness because there's no chance for that connection again, you know, in your mind. There's no chance for her to make that piece of art again, to make that presentation again, and not necessarily the same one, but a new one, a new connection, you know, a fresh epiphany that comes from an artist or a teacher or something that is created positively in the world. Yeah, you should value that. You should value that way above, you know, how many digits you got in your bank account, how much gold or silver you got, how many possessions you have of any kind. That is something that you can't necessarily buy, that connection. And, you know, for somebody who gave it to the world, yeah, you could feel sad for a while about that, even if you didn't know. Cool. I get it. But I'm not an opportunist, and that's all I want to say about that. So let's move on to something that's, I don't know, a little more in the entertainment genre, because, you know, it's always clowns and politics. Recent discussions, and I got to go Canadian on you. I know I'm typecasting you, right? Let's talk Canada with the guy from Canada. Yeah, so Justin Trudeau.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, it's getting kind of odd now. The way that people are, you know, for a little while there, he was sort of an interesting celebrity, seemingly, right? Didn't people want him to host Saturday Night Live? I don't think they ever invited him to the Grammys like they did Zelensky, but I'm sure if he had a TV show, they'd put it on Netflix also. Justin Trudeau, and even women sort of got, like, a little excited in America, like, oh, look at this guy, and... Yeah, you stand him next to Trump. I mean, you know, look, let's be frank. Who's more attractive? Okay. But outside of that circus, what else is happening? Because I'm hearing weird stuff now that, I don't know, even conspiracy theorists are not necessarily embracing, but some people are talking about, and it's not in the mainstream media because they're too busy with every other piece of nonsense. And, oh, by the way, we're revisiting the abortion thing. With an unprecedented leak from the Supreme Court, which, you know, That's going to be a main distraction for a little bit. I guess people were starting to tune away from the Ukraine war. But anyway, enough out of me. Jeffrey Matt, tell me a little bit about just maybe what you've taken notice of in that sphere, that odd sphere that we call Canadian politics lately.
Gosh. Well, you know, my take, some of the stuff is repetitive, what I've said in past shows, but I have to say it again just to help those who are hearing this for the first time. You know, I met Justin Trudeau twice. Both times it was unplanned, and just by chance I was in Ottawa, and he was doing some sort of I was like, wow, there's a group of people across the street. Let's check it out. I go across, and sure, lo and behold, he's wearing a hockey shirt. And so anyways, I ended up getting a selfie with him, and I didn't understand the scope of what was happening. This is several years, couple years before COVID even started. So I was, you know, we all wake up at different speeds and different rates. I'm just a regular guy. I understood that there was a globalist component, you know, to what he did, but I didn't realize how complete it was. It's just utterly complete. And so when I met him, we didn't have any discussion. It was just like picture time. So he's very, very gentlemanly in the sense if you meet with him, be very polite and courteous. But his decisions are not really – I wouldn't it's a corporation. You know, if you go to Dun & Bradstreet and you look up Government of Canada, you'll find that it's a corporation. And you'll also find out that there's a lot of people who have dual roles. There'll be one position here, but then they'll be in another group that also works in conjunction with globalism. And so you don't know the alliance component. You don't know where they're steering until you see what happens. I mean, Canada is just falling in line with the global pattern, the global corporate rollout of this whole, you know, social credit system. And a lot of people are not waking up in Canada based on what I see myself personally. I'm not able to go all over Canada and check everybody, and I wouldn't if I even had the power. But I'm just saying a lot of people here, unfortunately, are really caught inside the narrative. I mean, when you have a $600 million bailout for the media, of course they're not going to talk about that. They're going to take the money and they're going to do their job and everybody's going to get paid. And then later on we'll find out not everything was accurate. And then it'll be too late. You know, that's basically what we're dealing with, is we're dealing with orchestrated, planned corporate failure. And it's being rolled out in a way that I can't prove this, is just my opinion, is that it's being rolled out with the assistance of artificial intelligence. Because the timing of all this stuff, as soon as the smokescreen of COVID starts to die away and they're backing off, supposedly they're backing off, a war starts. You know, and then the war isn't enough, then it's abortion. If it's not, it's going to just keep rolling out more problems and more problems. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, most people don't know, you know, if you go up and ask them, they don't know what you're talking about. You know, 8 out of 10, supposedly, I can't know this for sure, because everything is it's so difficult to know what's actually happening statistically. You have to dig down to white papers. You have to find out who financed it. And most people don't do that. So a large chunk of Canadians, unfortunately, I think, are still asleep. And you know, there's people who don't even realize, who have decided to go ahead and get the injection and proceed. They don't realize that there's the society's changing around them. It's just unbelievable. I think that's the biggest shock that I've come across, is that there are people who are not able to detect danger correctly. They're not able to detect that the change is not going in the right direction. They're not able to detect that this is a cascade failure corporate program, probably guided with artificial intelligence to roll out the new slurry of wave of problems societally. And then finally they're going to say, well, we have multiple over 10 provinces here in Canada, and they all had a different approach to dealing with COVID, and it just didn't work. Well, of course it didn't work. It's not supposed to. That's why the Health Organization is going to take over.
Right. And I was just going to say, look, you know, 10 provinces or 50 states, it's kind of irrelevant, except it's a lot more people here.
Yeah.
You would almost have to use artificial intelligence, because I don't think the human mind is capable of the mismanagement that has occurred here.
Correct.
You know, you got trillions of dollars. Now, again, people throw around that number like it's nothing now, but let's be honest, to manage thousands of dollars becomes difficult for an individual, okay, sometimes. And it's not because they're stupid, it's just because, you know what, when you get outside of what is immediately relatable, it becomes a difficult thing. You start dealing in theoretical. Have you ever witnessed a trillion of anything in one place? Truthfully, a trillion of anything physically. Like, I'm asking this question in general, not just to you, Jeffrey, because the thing is, you got to begin to wrap your mind around that number. Why? When you take a look at the trillions of dollars that the American government spent on the PPE and the loans and the paycheck stuff, and okay, we're going to stem, you know, the tide of unemployment, which they didn't sustain very long, but they were capable of distributing massive amounts of money in a fairly short amount of time and mishandling it so badly that it turns out, if you look at certain people's independent research into this, you'll find that not like a significant minority of that money was misspent or, you know, sent to places where it shouldn't have been, given to, you know, oh my, places like, you know, okay, what is it, Kanye? I think it's Kanye. Yeah, Kanye West, who has a sneaker company, he got pandemic relief funds, right? Stuff like this, okay, the thing where they changed the tax structure and they gave out the tax credits to people that, you know, had children. Jeff Bezos got, you know, that for two of his kids. Weird things like that, right? They're not weird. They're built into the system and, in fact, actually represent the majority of how those trillions got spent. You know, if people want to complain, well, they gave out free money to people who didn't know what to do. Yeah, not if you actually now look at the books. That's not where that money went. If it did, and it did significantly stem the problem of shutting the hell down everything, it certainly did. The incoherent strategy, which proved to be, well, actually interesting, because it didn't matter what strategy you had. Things were going to ebb and flow as they were going to go. So shutting down the businesses and masking people up and everything else had, guess what, almost no effect, because the trajectories weren't consistent. You couldn't say, look, in a masked area, people did better. I know the media told you that. But in the aftermath, in the after action, guess what? It didn't work. None of it had a consistent, reliable effect. Whether you had shots coming in or you had people not masking, or it didn't matter. So, and that's according to their numbers, by the way. It, like, you and I don't actually have independent numbers on this, but if we did, I'm thinking we might find that that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. And you can't possibly mismanage that, the money, and everything. I don't think a human being would be capable of pulling that off. Or even a Congress of human beings, a Congress, again, you know, what is Congress? Well, that happens to be sexual activity. And who is actually getting done and who does the doing? Well, I'll leave you to judge it. But point is, that I don't think even a whole corporation of individuals working together seemingly as a team and everything else could have dreamt this up. I think AI had to mismanage this.
And, it's on purpose. It's on purpose. I mean, how can you – look, if here's the oversimplification of that, you know, this is – sorry, I apologize if this is unpopular just, you know, to somebody out there, but they're – everybody in their personality has stuff they don't want to bend on. Everybody has it. There's people who are very courteous and very empathic and generous and kind, and they go out of their way to be of service and to help their fellow man. But most people have something they don't want to bend on. I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to be part of that. So if and then the other thing too is most people don't know what it's like to have to manage 7-8 billion people. I don't have any personal life, professional life experience of managing 8 billion people. So if I had that, and I, with my temperament, my lack of, you know, I'm not a seasoned warrior or anything like that, I'm just a regular guy, I would struggle to try to find a way to say, hey guys, there's a problem with the oceans. We need to stop dropping garbage in the ocean. We need to stop these things. And then there's going to be a fight about how to do it. So basically the point of what I'm noticing, what I'm trying to say is, and what I've noticed as a pattern in human behavior, especially when you get into governmental systems. First of all, we don't even have a government. This is just my opinion. I don't think anybody anywhere on earth actually has a government that represents the people. Now, that can be debated. Some people say, well, we have a constitutional republic. When I go look at dunandbradstreet.com and I type in government of the United States, I see it as a corporation. It makes me wonder, why was it established in 1787? And did they include the Constitution as part of the corporate filings, so that it means that they're actually upholding that? I'd have to go investigate that in more depth. And then the next thing that comes across my mind is, well, how come so few people want to know who did the bailout? How come nobody wants to know who did the bailout? If I went to somebody and I say, hey, you have a company? Yeah. Okay, so if you ever get into debt, let me know. If things become out of hand financially, unexpected accidents, the roof had to be repaired 6 times and it sucked $250,000, you're in the hole. Let me know. You just hire me as the treasurer. I'll write a check and I'll bail you out. Well, that's not real. You can't get away with that anywhere. But for some reason, you can't with the U.S. government incorporated. So if Hank Paulson does his magic, right, suppose some sort of specialized magic, and then they come up with some random number, we need $700+ billion, and supposedly after all the paperwork is settled down, is only $400 billion or something like that. That was for the supposedly the TARP program. It just helps me understand that very few people, I'm not talking about the listenership here, because the listenership here wants to know. They believe in themselves.
Here's the thing, though, Jeffrey. I want to stop you there because you know what? You and I know this. They know this. We're now preaching to the choir. I think it's a good idea to take it to a different lens, okay? To break it down in a different way and see if you want to go along with me on this. If not, by all means, continue on and I'll just sit back. But here's the thing. Again, about this management issue, you said a very key thing here. How are you going to manage 8 billion people? Okay, now that's, again, a big theoretical number. When was the last time you actually physically put your eyes on 8 billion of anything outside of grains of sand, okay?
Yeah.
All right. So here's the thing. Let's try and take it down to everything's a business. And if you're running a business and you've got 100 employees, I mean, you may have a personnel manager and they can handle that. 100 employees, one guy. Okay. Let's say that that's possible. But as this begins to multiply exponentially, where are you going? Well, now you need 10 people to handle that department, right? Now you need a whole group of people. You need a board, whatever. Okay. You need a board to shore up the ship so it doesn't sink, I guess. But whatever. As you multiply this, and are there governments? You were saying there's no governments. Well, I was about to disagree with you until you said that represent the people, because then I can't. but here's the thing. Just think about it from a management standpoint. Forget about nefarious. Forget about whether they're just looking to profit off of the people they're managing. Okay? The idea is that we know that people are being managed. So who would be capable of handling the number as it stands? Who would be capable of handling, the nation state where people are geographically located? Forget about the business arrangement or anything else. There's a geographical location. Pick a nation. I like going with America because it's a fairly large number and it's the one people will relate to. But we could go anywhere on this. And then tell me that the amount of people that are managing these things, even with the bloated bureaucracies where there's plenty of redundancy, ridiculousness, ineptitude, etc., tell me for a second that they could even manage or mismanage that situation. Realistically, I think it's a given now that this, this concept, artificial intelligence, it's brand new. Oh, you heard about it in The Matrix. And it seems to me as though there had to have been something that was a force multiplier long before now, in order for this to even remain reasonably appearing coherent up to this point. So, if you break it down to a management level, how is it that you're going to have this little group of people manage the masses? How do you do that? In just a pragmatic sense. Again, let's just say they're benevolent. They're the benevolent gods.
Yeah, right. Okay.
We've seen that concept in science fiction over and over again, haven't we? Right? There's the benevolent overlord who happens to control the technocracy, and yeah, they're not making things up. They're just telling you what's happening. But anyway, when they do that, there is always an element here. There has to be an intelligence beyond comprehension. And usually you could boil that down to the, you know, there's a definition to artificial intelligence, but in reality, there has to be an intelligence outside of that, which a group of people or a person is capable of. Otherwise, you don't manage a planet. Okay, it's not just about administration. Administration is the side you see, but frankly, how is it that you manage all of this? It seems to me as though artificial intelligence has to have been in the matrix for a long time already, longer than people realize. And at this point, it would be incomprehensible to imagine a system in which there is not this thing that we do know now as artificial intelligence, and promise you, we don't know all the proprietary information about what goes on. That has to be in play here. Now, as for who made who, you know, like the Stephen King movie where the machines take over, or the Terminator universe and all that stuff, well, it doesn't necessarily have to begin with a war, does it? But at a certain point, you got to figure who is actually in charge. Do the people that appear to be in power even reckon with what it is that's really in charge of them, too? You know, this is where I'm going with this. I think it's a larger question to ask exactly how this management is done. And again, I don't even think that somebody could screw up enough and still keep the thing running to take those trillions of dollars, distribute them the way they did, to mismanage and still simultaneously convince the public that they were acting in their best interest when it came to the trust the science crowd. Okay, which, you know, again, if you do trust science, actually, it means you don't trust science, because science doesn't trust itself. It has to keep retesting. And indeed, we have had mixed results all the way around. Okay, no matter what type of threat you think this was, where it came from, or anything else, nobody, interesting consistency here, nobody had the right plan. Nobody. So that almost seems like either, you know, man learns his limitations, or his limitations are given to him by the actual controller. What are your thoughts on that and the role of AI? Because I see it as an absolute given that it must be in play and must be in control of a great deal more than we are ever, ever going to be allowed to know about at this point in time. What do you think about that?
I think AI plays a central role in what we're facing today. I think it was 2002. Just as a personal note, just to help you give it my example of why I feel this way. I had just got a new job giving tech support for Bluetooth and internet and the phone, and because it was like the first corporation to my knowledge at the time in North America, or if not Steve number one, giving technical support to all the new technologies in the early 2000s, including smartphones and all that. And I got a MacBook Pro, and you could take the battery out, right? And then over the years, you couldn't take the battery out. Then over the years, it started to become more and more wireless, and then there's less cables, and then they took away all the adapter holes. And so now the only way you can connect, you know, is through wireless, through Wi-Fi. And so they're, and then the same thing with cell phones. You couldn't take the battery out. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. It's always on. And I knew somebody who used to work at 911, and he says they can listen in on all your phones, whether your phone's off or on.
One really quick question about that battery issue, and it is an honest question, is, you know, I recall a time when you had to give batteries a rest. So by design, they're now made so that, yeah, people never shut off their phones. They never shut off their devices. They always leave them powered. But that was literally counterintuitive to earlier technology. Like, am I imagining this, or, you know, because I just want to focus on that point for a second. Is that not true? I mean, it used to be, look, you got to give the batteries a rest. You got to give the power cell a rest because, well, it overheats. But also, it's just good for the lifespan of the product. And nowadays, the absolute opposite is encouraged. I mean, is that not true?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't have the perfect scientific answer, but I think that there are things that should have been, we should have been taught instead of just given the technology, and we learn about what should and shouldn't be done with certain technology. Most people, most of the time, you learn it when you're actually on the job. You rarely get the training of explaining, here's why you have to let the computer rest. I remember working in one place, there's literally thousands of computers in the network, and it says, we don't want to turn the towers off because the interruption of power on the PC tower could the surge of turning it off and turning on for some guy in IT says, you can't do that. You got to leave it on all the time. Okay, well, what about the electricity bill? Don't worry about that. Replace fewer parts. So each person seems to have a different approach to it. I don't know what it is for the battery, but I understand what you mean, and I know what you're saying. They just migrated all the technology. Then they came out with the self checkouts at the grocery stores, and everything's computerized, ATMs. I mean, there's advantages to all this technology. It's just not being administered by leaders. It's by misleaders, and they get the wrong people who have the personality to say, I don't care, to such an extreme powerful point where they can use the power, I don't care, to roll out stuff that makes no sense for our species, our planet, our I don't actually think we have a civilization. I think what we actually have is a secret society network that people call governments and countries today, but actually it's the precursor to AI. If you get a social network, that's like a platform where everybody gets to be on the supposed level playing field, and you guide everybody through the technology over the years by removing abilities and choices that you used to have on your computers and used to have on your cell phones, and removing it, replacing it with no choice. Right. Just like when you travel, you have no choice to go through some sort of, what is it called, TSA and all that. It's all grooming and training people to be okay with an outdoor prison environment.
Well, right. And look, with the technology, just really quickly, because a question came in the chat room that I'm not sure if I fully understand, so I'd like you to restate it. The chatter there, Citizen GX, because, look, microphones and cameras being turned on and being shut off and all that, there's multiple levels to that where you could have a device which does not appear to be powered, and yet the microphone is still powered and able to broadcast. Even on turned off cell phones and stuff like this, or computer, you think you turned off the microphones on your end. Sure you did, but they're still accessible. Now, not all the technology is universal regarding this, but the fact is that it leads itself to this greater continuous, unending, seemingly, surveillance state that all of us find ourselves in. And by the way, Jeffrey was about to go into the wireless end of it a little more and give you an idea that now, you know, you don't even need to send in the wires directly. You don't need to tap a phone line or anything like that. You can literally pull data out of the air because it's constantly being radiated. Through the connected Wi-Fis, the various, individuals who are also participating in building the very grid that will imprison them. That's the truth of it, because now, look, if I have the right access codes, I can access everybody's network. I can pick up everybody's information as it's being sent wirelessly if I know how to do it. And, does the common person have access to this? No. And also, I think that people fail to recognize exactly how much access a whole lot of individuals have to their stuff. One way or another, they think there's privacy is such a myth at this point. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
So You know, I just assume at all times I'm being monitored, and I figure that's just my best default position, because if I'm anywhere near an electronic electricity or other people, one way or another, they're either voluntarily or involuntarily participating in monitoring me. So go ahead, Jeffrey. I'm sorry, but I just wanted to address that, and I'm going to look back at the chat room. But please get into the wireless stuff before we run out of time.
Yeah, and really quick, too. I mean, there's a X-Files episode. I don't remember the which one it was, but basically the guy finally tells Mulder, or I forget which one of the main characters, we don't need cameras, okay? And so they're able to tune in wirelessly and either some sort of harmonic frequency of some kind, and they're able to tune it in. Sort of like the opposite is if you're on the highway and you see the mirage, the heat coming off of the highway, it's distortion. Well, imagine if you knew how to reverse that distortion, where you could put a GPS coordinate into this computer and then emit a frequency there exactly, and it creates an image. You can see what's going on. You don't need a camera. So, and then there was a 4-star general that went on YouTube and did some sort of presentation like a year or two, a couple years ago, saying there's a certain place in China, you don't need to pull out your smartphone, your AI, basically house arrest device, to call an Uber or whatever it is in China. You are the phone. You just have to raise your hand or look at a computer. It'll recognize your face. You can maybe speak audibly and it can hear you. So this is all coming here. It's already being rolled out and everything. So people can look at that. IntelliStreets, I think that's the name of a corporation that sells. I'm not saying that they're trying to create an outdoor prison. I'm just saying they have the technology in a street lamp that's wireless. It records all, you know, probably connected to facial recognition on the back end. They have us. They all have us. So that's why they hire people who people would call today politicians and others, who are okay with no matter what. Doesn't matter what it is. We'll, you know, sever the earth in half, no problem. How much does it pay? So these technologies are we're decades behind. That's why we're never really able to wake up and figure out what's going on, because they keep bombarding us with all this stuff. Not even to mention the health impacts of all this wireless. We're in a soup of wireless trash.
Right.
So.
No, and just really quickly, I'm not sure if I'm being laughed at for saying what I'm saying about the devices, because they say, you know, take your battery out of your cell phone, it's okay. I've seen a micro battery which does allow a microphone to still function and broadcast in a phone that appears to have no power. Yeah. And years ago, we took apart Atlantic Scientific converter cable boxes and found microphones and things in them that were able to broadcast, which they said was for voice-activated technology, which they implemented only a couple of years ago. But they said that they were trying to be ahead of it. It was sort of like the card readers that were also involved with that. And it's funny because they had a whole bunch of parts in there that made no sense, were not required to de-scramble cable signals and all this other stuff that were inside of the boxes. And over and over again, I'm not saying every manufacturer is the same, but taking your battery out of your cell phone does not eliminate the possibility that it's still being powered. And, you know, some people would say, well, the battery dies eventually. But yeah, no, because actually it's designed to pick up bits of energy just to keep that very minimal sort of broadcast capability available. So unless you absolutely destroy the device completely, you may indeed have something that's still able to broadcast. Now, you can't use it, but somebody else can access it.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was the thing with the cable boxes, too, is you could access that stuff. I mean, your cable box is listening to you if you have a cable box. Your TV's probably listening to you. Okay, because they have anything with a voice interactive at this point is an obvious thing that can be listening to you at all times, whether you press the button or not, whether it has power or not. Okay, so I know it sounds like a crazy theory or whatever to some people, but it's true. I've seen it done with a phone with no battery in it.
I heard of a patent. I have to go double check because I don't want to make a mistake with the listenership, but this is more to help people see how far possibly we've come down the road. I heard that the flat screen TVs the pixels on them, there's a, some sort of technology or patent that it's a two-way thing. So you can take just ambient light in the room, and that screen is actually doubles as a camera. You don't actually need a camera webcam that you can buy as a separate attachment, or the one on your laptop that people put a piece of tape over. I don't know how, I'd have to go back and double check it, but if that were to be true, that the Pixel could be technologically malleable enough to actually be a camera itself, so you combine all the pixels, it just takes ambient light, you can see everything in the whole room.
Yeah.
They can take sound, a video with no sound, and extrapolate sound from a video with no sound. They can hear what you're saying in a room without having a microphone at all. I mean, I think, what was it, James Corbett did a video on that, and his work is sensational. One of the few people I enjoy listening to, or I am constantly learning with him.
Right. He's absolutely great. He was on the show recently, but he's absolutely great at this stuff. And the truth is that, again, I had heard about this before Corbett, but he does a great presentation on it. And the opposite of what you just said is also true, is that with a sonar sort of technology, just with sound, without visual, you can extrapolate the visual. See, because, again, there are resonant frequencies and acoustics and things like that, determine the size of the room, what the sound is bouncing off of, and come up with fairly close visual approximations without having any visual access or light in the room, as long as you've got sound. Both things can be done, and in fact, I'm sure both things are combined into sort of technology that means you can't hide anywhere. So, you know, just because you're speaking in a domicile where you think you've got everything with the exception of maybe a Faraday cage and you've absolutely crushed the acoustics so that there's no way you have a soundproof room, a soundproof and lightproof room that's also in a Faraday cage, you might have privacy. Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay, just saying. So
maybe.
This is the point at which the technology is definitely at or has already surpassed. So how could it even be logical that things like this could be managed again by a human interface? I mean, think about the data that has to be generated, extrapolated in the equations that you and I just discussed. You think one guy with a slide rule can do that? I mean, maybe there's a guy out there who can do that, but I've never met him. The amount of calculations that must be made, the amount of variables which must be addressed. A force multiplier like artificial intelligence is not just, something that would seem useful, but is absolutely necessary for us to have gotten to this point already. So I say again, for people that think that this is some kind of new phenomenon, I'm a little creeped out by Siri. And what was that robot that got citizenship in Saudi Arabia? What was her name?
Sophia or something like that.
Sophia, there you go. You know what? That's just the junk. That's just the junk. The real brain, nobody's going to show that to you. And you know what? Even if they did, the majority of people wouldn't understand it. They it would be incomprehensible once again. You know, like that old theory that there was at one time natives that were on the shore, and they told weird stories, and people made a lot of it. But there were significantly a group of natives who did not see people showing up on ships. They just saw people show up, on the shore. And they thought they were magical to some degree because, well, it would be magical if you just walked out of the ocean.
Right.
Okay? but literally because they couldn't comprehend the idea of what it was that was in the distance. They had no frame of reference. It made sense that, well, suddenly there's a person here. Something has happened that's extraordinary. When meanwhile, it's, somebody who just figured out how not to sink, making a trip across a large body of ocean, which would not be miraculous to us today in any way, shape, or form. But if you never saw it before, and very much like I think if you never saw the systems that actually interface with the artificial intelligence right now, they might be fully incomprehensible to the majority of people. Even though you think you're familiar with technology, you only know about the toys and the junk and the failures, really.
Yeah.
Okay, the stuff that's really working, who's going to share that?
Nobody. And they want to get rid of us all so they don't have to. Now there's not a possibility that they have to you know, to possibly share it or have to know if we're all gotten rid of, including the people executing this insane, this criminally insane plan, then you have, then there is no competition. That's, isn't that what Rockefeller said? Competition is a sin. We got to get rid of that 6-7 billion people. You got to get rid of them or else, because that's competition. So AI is a prison tech. Mm-hmm. And it's also a harvesting factory farming technology at the same time. And it's extracting everything about your personality and DNA samples and all this stuff with, you know, supposedly the PCR tests were some of them were it's all going into AI.
Yeah.
We're confronting it. That's why it's so difficult for people to follow. Not that I have all the answers, but I think you're right, Chuck, about a lot of stuff that you described this evening.
Well, and, I appreciate that. And again, you know, we've run right out of time, but it's always good to talk to Jeffrey, Matt. Sorry I started out on a sour note, actually, but we needed to get to some other information. And believe it or not, I feel it's significant to address that. And I didn't want to run right out and get to it, but I do resent it. I, you know what? Blame me for the things I've done. I'll admit to them, even the bad things I've done. But don't accuse me of stuff that is just ludicrous, please. It's all I ask, really. You know, blame me for the stuff I've done. Jeffrey, Matt, I don't blame you for the stuff you've done. I appreciate you taking the time tonight. And Nico House, man, that was an interesting talk for an hour. The Ocelli Effect is done for tonight. No matter who you are, where you are, when you are, remember, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Night.